Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here we go on a Monday in KC. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Oh, it feels good. It feels
Victory
good.
Victory Monday.
Yeah, that was much needed yesterday. It'd been a while. Been a while since the offense, since the Chiefs looked like a dominant football team. It's 1 week. We'll get into some of the issues, obviously, that still exist and how real do we think it is and all that. But that was awesome to see yesterday. I hope everybody had an enjoyable Sunday. I know certainly if you're at Arrowhead, it was a perfect day. A little warm, but it was perfect out there.
Warm. Chiefs were winning, and not just winning.
Oh, man.
Absolutely putting a beat down on the Baltimore Ravens a week after we had to spend time being like, look, they're an equally flawed team, and we believe that that should be discussed as a part of it. But because they were scoring points, everyone was viewing it a little bit different in the Ravens camp. And then that turned in. So the first drive goes down and Baltimore scores and you're like, oh, could be a long day on defense. We'll see. And then from that point on, it was all Chiefs. Really after that drive and moving forward in that drive, I guess maybe after the first two Chiefs field goals, you're like, really? You're going to settle for field goals all day? From that point, maybe on, it was nothing but all Chiefs. Of course, you should feel good. Beat a team. You're back to 500. Take on a Jaguars team that somehow has a better record than you through four games.
They should be undefeated.
I know.
The Jags should actually be undefeated.
Yes and no. They could have easily lost some of their other games too, but they could easily be undefeated. I'm not arguing that. But you got a good Jags team. The Lions are good. And then a couple weeks away from Rashee Rice appearing back for your football team. So as much, and this is what we said, you're going to feel a lot better if you came in here if they beat the Baltimore Ravens. But we feel even better than that because they kicked their ass.
Yeah, the way it looked, it was all about just find a way to win. It could have been 20-20 or 21-20 and we've been fine. You know, it could have been an ugly 17-16 win. You would have said, hey, a win's a win. But the fashion it happened, a complete football game for the Kansas City Chiefs in week four was
one of the most
exactly
complete ever.
What you needed. Yeah, you probably have to go back to the Bears game last year. I think that's the Christmas Day game, I'm sorry, last year. That's probably the last time you felt this good after a loss or after a win, I'm sorry, for the Chiefs, because you saw the offense perform at the level it did. I would say
not a
it
single
was,
penalty from the offensive line.
Yeah, Juwan
Zero.
Taylor, we're not talking about him this week. I promise we won't at all. After, like, this is the only time I'm mentioning his name this week. That's a good thing. That's what should happen for offensive linemen. You notice that Josh Simmons, nobody really talked about him yesterday. That means he played awesome because nobody's talking about Josh Simmons. It was truly amazing to see finally the offense come together. Now, we'll get into some of the more specifics in a little bit. We welcome your interaction over on the Jay Southlands host service text line, 913-586-7965. Also, the video stream up and running. We are aware that the app might be having some issues today, so apologies. Hopefully that gets corrected. But if you're trying to get on the Odyssey app and having problems, you're not alone. We got an email right before we hopped on the show. It's out of our control. It's a whole nationwide thing right now with the Odyssey app. So make sure you check out YouTube if you're having Odyssey app issues, or obviously listen on the FM on 96.5 The Fan. But let's get into this more specifically, because Patrick Mahomes, for really the last year and a half, has been nationally heavily criticized because of his performance. And we've talked about it here. He has not played his best football, but so much of the conversation had to always include what happens when you start having a competent offensive line. What happens when you have the weapons that you're supposed to have out there? What happens when that occurs? What's his play like then? And yesterday it was his best football game in 700 days or so, if you want to go off of the four touchdown at least performance. It's the first time since 2023 Mahomes had four touchdowns, and to have in what was such a massive game for you to put together that type of performance, That's the reminder of where, hey, things can all come together still, and it's a long season.
When you go, and it doesn't mean that we ever doubted it, but when you go a really long period of time without it looking easy, because, again, last year, it's not that they didn't win a lot of games. They obviously won a lot of games, Gold, but at no point did it seem like it was simple or easy for them. That game was easy. Against a top opponent, it was easy. And I understand that the Ravens are now 1-3, and they got a massive amount of injuries and everything else in between there. But if nationally people are going to gush over the performance that Josh Allen put up against the Ravens, if they're going to gush what Jared Goff did, if these games are going to matter and they're going to matter for other quarterbacks, well, then they got to matter for Patrick Mahomes. They got to matter for him too. And we got to talk about it that same way. And we got to give it that same amount of credence because, again, that was their most complete performance in 2 years. Like, even more so for me than the Bears, because the Bears ones had the haphazard things going wrong part of it. The Chiefs didn't return kicks for touchdowns. They weren't blocking everything. They just played incredibly hard-nosed defense, created pressure through blitzes, kept Lamar Jackson, who was playing once again at an MVP level, off his game completely from the jump, and then dominated offensively. So, like, it was just a complete effort. That's what really stood out to me. It felt like a full game of just dominance.
It was that, and also, how entertaining was that? That's the difference, too. You know, it's, as we say, just find a way to win, but it was those two games that we've referenced, either the Christmas Day game last year or the Bears game, when you watch him, the offense was fun and exciting to watch. That's what people have gotten used
passes,
to.
Yeah.
That's what people have gotten used to in Kansas City during this dynasty run that they've been in. That when it was really, really fun, not only just winning football games, but it's when the offense looked like they could break off an explosive play at any time, when there was tons of creativity and speed on the field. And we're going to talk about Xavier Worthy specifically here in about 5 minutes, and we'll hear from him from after the game. But when Breshard Smith's on the field and Worthy's on the field, you can see how everything just opens up offensively. And then with that, Mahomes was playing with, I think, renewed confidence because he trusts the offensive line. And frankly, you trust the play calling more when things are in a rhythm and a flow, and you're not shaking your head, frustrated playing throughout the game and trying to do too much. The only time that happened at the beginning of the game was, and Mahomes referenced it in his post-game comments, was they had a couple guys open on the opening drive, and I think that the pass was batted down. He was trying to get the ball. I think it was to Juju, and that got batted down. Otherwise, the play was there.
He was open. Yeah.
So as much as, you know, the understandably so, the play calling's been criticized, and you know, again, when things go well, Andy's the genius. When they go bad, Matt Nagy's the idiot. That's how, for whatever reason, everybody treats this thing. That plan was awesome yesterday. When you have the tools to run an effective offense, they can execute. They can call a pretty good game, it turns out, again. They didn't forget how the hell to call a football game. It's just that their hands were tied behind their back a little bit when you're out there relying on an older Travis Kelce and just, you know, third and fourth receivers. Worthy being on the field changed everything for the offense.
Yeah, it really did. The second, and look, I'll admit, I'll wait before I'm like, offense fixed. And I'm not saying you're saying that. Problem solved. No problems anymore. Nothing to see here, because the Ravens defense is admittedly horrid.
Yep.
Horrid. They're one of the worst, if not the worst, defense in the entire NFL.
But they did what you're supposed to do.
Correct.
A fully functional offense is supposed to dominate
that way. They're not for dominating a bad defense. But I am going to have to see them function that way and operate that way against a better defense before I'm like back into the... And I told you, I think they can be a top five offense with Worthy and Rice, but it was going to take time to see that. But I mean, there's no doubt that it made a significant difference. He had 120 plus yards off seven touches. He averaged like 15 yards a touch in that game. He also has the single longest run for the team.
He did.
On the year now. In addition to and by the way, Mahomes missed him on, not missed him. You know, you don't hit every deep pass. Those are lower probability. He had him open deep more than the times he hit him. So like Worthy was having zero trouble getting open. Marlon Humphrey gave up the most yards per pass in the NFL over the weekend. It was just nice to see it. And Worthy is a huge part of why I thought it just made everything smoother. It made the running backs look better. It made Kelce look better. It made Mahomes look better and the offensive line look better. Turns out having an explosive player somehow makes the offense look more explosive.
Yeah, and so like, there's always more nuance required for the conversation. We acknowledge, you acknowledge there too, the injuries to Baltimore. And I think, though, there's renewed excitement of what this offense can be. You had to at least see them be fully functional for a game. and look explosive again. And they just did that. And knowing that at some point, you're still getting Rashee Rice back. That's why I get what you're saying, where you're like, hey, I got to see it for a couple more weeks. The reason why I believe like the offense is back to the certain extent of like they're going to be one of the better offenses. I'm not saying that like now I think they're going to start averaging 30 points a game. That's not what I'm saying. But knowing that they did that without Rashee Rice against a defense that has struggled, you know, what happens when, yes, they play a better defense, but also what happens when that opponent is going to have to deal with Rice and Worthy on the field at the same time, let alone if they're fortunate enough to have Brown and Thornton on the field. That's the thing about Worthy's day. You're right about the 100 yards of scrimmage, over 100 yards from scrimmage. But Worthy, Kelce, and Mahomes did not score touchdowns. Mahomes didn't run one in, is what I mean. They didn't have touchdowns. They spread it around. Pacheco obviously had the touchdown. Juju's getting in the end zone. Hollywood Brown's getting in on the end zone. Tyquan Thorne's getting in on the end zone. Like that to me was what made the win more impressive. That everybody got involved, and it wasn't, while Worthy's impact was massive, it wasn't like he had three touchdowns. You're like, okay, well, that's not sustainable. It opened things up for Juju and everybody else. Here's what Xavier Worthy had to say on getting back out there and obviously where his health was at going into the game.
Once I got tackled the first time, I was good. Just needed to test it out. Now, I'm glad it was just happened on the first play so I could get it going. I didn't have to play scared. When I got hurt, I mean, I was trying to get back in immediately, but I just couldn't lift my arm. But when I got hurt and then when I got back to KC, I was trying to get back in as fast as possible. I mean, the coaches, I mean, they know how I am as a player. I mean, they probably helped me back for myself more than anything. I was trying to get back out there at the same time. So, I mean, I never had no worry about me coming back.
That last part aligns with what you had been hearing for the last week or two.
He
wanted to play in not just the Giants game, but that when he all of a sudden was limited in practice that Friday before the Eagles game. Like, no, he thought he was good to go there. Obviously, it ends up working out. They get the win against the Giants. They now get the win against the Ravens. And he looked good to go. I think, you know, immediately, first play from scrimmage, they got him the football. And he acknowledged it. Get the first hit out of the way, and then you're just playing football. And he did a good job, too. I think there were a couple plays that was pretty evident. He did kind of, like, slide down a little bit just to protect himself. But that's fine. He should do that. There's no reason to try. Because a guy of his size also, you're not going to break many tackles anyway, dude. Like that's not his game. It's all about speed.
Make
a miss. You're not going to run through a guy anyway. So why even jeopardize the shoulder whatsoever?
I guess a lot of it for Worthy, and this is where, like, it makes a big difference for them, is this is still, and this is what we probably don't mention, this is still a far more complete offense than at any point that they had Worthy last year.
Yeah.
Because Hollywood is available and has been playing football. Tyquan Thornton is better than any option they had at the back end of the white, and I know he only caught the one pass, since Worthy, Kelce, and Brown did what we would expect out of them, and even Juju did what we expect out of them. They were far more balanced than I've seen them. And look, I'm curious to see how they roll Rice back into this and what the balance of wide receivers look like, but they're going to be really difficult to guard. Really, really difficult to guard because of all the reasons we just mentioned, and the deep passing game being back is a huge part of it. And look, there's certainly still some problems in the running game. I'm not denying that.
That's still the biggest issue with the offense, yeah.
But a huge part of, and I know one of them was because he kept jumping behind the line. I barely remember Mahomes running at all. And I know he ran two or three times, and they were all
four
good
times
for,
for 5 yards.
Although this is like a really small, I don't think Andy should be allowed legally. I think it should be like finable. I don't think he should be allowed to be running option plays inside the 5-yard line and not run a QB sneak, but that's fine. You know, he's got Mahomes running for
that was bizarre.
A weird play call. I'm going to let that one go because they scored a bunch of points. I don't want to get bogged down on that part, but he made a huge difference. I think a lot of this is they haven't been explosive for a long time, but they also have not had players who can get down the field and make massive plays in a long time. Thornton is now that, Worthy is that, and you see what difference it makes in their ability to score every single day. I'm not just like offensive problems are solved, because again, the Ravens defense is awful, but it was reassuring to know that they could, like you and I going into the game, we're like, hope it's a game in the 20s. Who was it Friday? Who was talking about they thought that a shootout would not be the worst thing for the Chiefs
Danan.
To get into.
Danan. Danan, yeah.
And I was like, I don't know if I want the Chiefs having to score 30. They could have scored 45, 50 in that game if they had to. They just put on the brakes once the third quarter hit, and they didn't need to put any more points.
Yeah, Mahomes wasn't even out there when the kneel downs was happening.
Then we got Gardner Minshew time.
Gardner Minshew. And I would say I would have thought he was going to be on the drive earlier. Like, I actually, there were some people.
Yeah, why was he in there when it was 37 to 20 and Lamar was out?
It was pretty surprising. But
37-13.
One of those wins that gets, I mean, as you can imagine, the locker room was as happy as it's been all season long. And you could tell that the vibes were pretty good not only in the locker room, but obviously from Kansas City Chiefs fans, as they should be in the text line, I think for the most part is pretty reasoned with their response, right? I think everybody is acknowledging kind of what we're saying, which is, hey, this is what was needed to see. Also knowing the opponent, also knowing the issues. My only thing is I don't want to move the goalposts though either. At the same time, while we can acknowledge the Ravens defense was banged up and got even more banged up during the game, it was kind of crazy how they ended up, by the end of the game, seven starters were out, but the Chiefs were already up considerably by that point in time, but still they kept suffering injuries. We can acknowledge that while also not moving the goalposts and now saying, well, now they got to do it against this team. Like at first it was like, I got to see anything from them. And then now we're, all week people were picking the Ravens to win and saying they were just a better team. Now we're saying, well, the Ravens aren't that good. So which one is it? Like, that's my only problem with their performance. Like, we don't need to move the goalposts too much on what the Chiefs did on Sunday against the Baltimore Ravens.
I just think if we're doing that, then we need to dismiss that the Lions, because like coming out of that game, I remember the story. Gold, we came in on that Monday. We're like, yeah, maybe the early demise of the Lions offense was a little too exaggerated. Yeah. That's what people were saying coming out of that game. So like, if that was your feeling about the Lions offense, and by the way, the Lions have continued to score. It's not like they stopped scoring.
Their offense
is
fully
game.
Back. Yep.
If that was your feeling about the Lions offense coming out of that game, that should be your feeling about the Chiefs offense. I get it. The Ravens have the worst defense in the NFL. Honestly, I can't believe they only gave up 17 points to the Browns. It's shocking, honestly, at that point. And they're going to be able to score on a lot of teams, and their schedule ideally will lighten up for them at some point, because going back-to-back, Lions, Chiefs isn't exactly going to help you out, and Bills in the first three games, that's a lot of tough opponents. But no, I don't think you want, like, again, I'm not dismissing it, and I'm not saying prove it to me as in, like, I, in the sense that just they're going to be the level of offense that they look like there. Not that they can be a good offense, not that they can be a lot better than the mediocre version and the bad offense of the first half we saw a week ago. It's not that. One game isn't enough of sample size to just be like, you're elite, we're all elite, but they're definitely a lot better.
No, they show that they can be fully functional with this group, and then the hope is when Rashee Rice comes back, they can pivot to being one of the better offenses. That's where now they're at least in position to do that now, if they can somehow improve the running game at all. That's the only way they can get to being at that top-tier level. They have to have a better running game to complement everything that's going on. But now if you're wondering, can their offense keep up with somebody? Can their offense do enough? And all that, to me, they answered that question, even if it was against a Baltimore Ravens opponent.
I just wonder whether or not, and I wonder, I can't wait to see the balance they strike when Rice comes back. Because look at this game, where they got the most touches by far. And then it was really balanced between Travis, Kelsey, Juju in this game. I'd say that the Juju, Tyquan, Thornton, Hollywood, I think it'll just be like, whose day is it? I don't know if you view it that way. I think those three guys would be like, whose day is it to be the fourth leading wide receiver on this team? And that guy might have three or four catches that day, but it's going to vary depending on the man, depending on the scheme, depending on the matchups and everything else in between it. And it's not going to be just one thing. It will be that. I will say the one biggest sign about the offense being like, to your point, if the offense is going to look like not this, but look amazing the rest of the year, be a top 10, top five offense the rest of the year. Offensive lines historically take a while to come together. It was a brand new left tackle, brand new left guard. And so you were going through some offensive changes on the offensive line. That was their best performance by a mile. The fact that Juwan Taylor didn't have any problems, the fact that Trey Smith and Creed Humphrey dominated, that you never, I don't once notice that Josh Simmons was on the field. To me, that's a great sign. When you just don't even notice him. Kingsley, by the way, for the first time in his NFL career, do you know how many pressures he allowed? None. Zero. He allowed
Left guard. They got thrown into the fire in week one against the Chargers front, thrown into the fire against an Eagles front in week two. Pretty damn good front with the Giants in week three, and then they played a depleted Ravens front in week four. So a reminder, like, hey, the first 3 weeks, not only were they trying to get the group together, but they were playing some of the better defensive fronts. Mm-hmm. Now everything balances out a little bit, and you can see they can be very effective. I think all around, we're kind of on the same page with this team. Coming up in 12 minutes, we will talk about the defense. We haven't focused in on them yet. That is one unit that I'm willing to say is elite.
Oh, we're good
on
that.
We'll get into that. I don't think we need to have any extra conversation about the opponents they've played for that. To me, this defense has shown now, post-Chargers game, that they are one of the better units in the National Football League. Before we get into the defense a little bit, couple news notes from the NFL just coming out in the last, 10 minutes or so. We obviously just want to acknowledge them. The Browns are trading for Texans tackle Cam Robinson for a swap of late round picks. So another offensive lineman the Texans are trading
Texans
away.
Texans want to give away more offensive linemen?
Should feel
they can't block already.
The Texans got their first win, much needed, dominant win over the Titans to get to 1-3. Their O-line's a mess, and yet, yeah, they trade away Cam Robinson. So that's kind of interesting. Old. And then Adam Schefter also reporting that, as expected, an MRI confirmed that standout wide receiver Malik Nabers of the Giants did indeed suffer a season-ending torn ACL during Sunday's game. So that's a bummer to see. That's awful. And Jackson Dart, obviously, we're going to talk about that win that they had against the Chargers, which is big for the Chiefs.
Thanks, Giants.
Malik Nabers, that sucks.
That's awful, honestly. And you could tell, like, and that's one of those, thankfully, like, for whatever reason, that game maybe just didn't hit the red zone at the time. I was whatever. And so I didn't see it. I didn't see the injury, thankfully. But it's immediately people are like, yep, that we've seen that one. And so you just feel really bad. And especially because young quarterback, chance to like get something going the rest
of
the year.
Who's their top receiver now? Wandell Robinson?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't, I mean, if I were the Giants, just to protect Jackson Dart a little bit, I'd be in the market with the bad teams. Even though it's like, why are you adding people? If they've got control, we talked about this like with the, like, if you got control, maybe they could be around for more than just 1 year. I'd be somewhat interested in trying to find him another target. I don't want to put him in that spot. He's going to start and supposed to have Malik Nabers. And then Malik Nabers immediately goes down with a season-long injury. And that's the kind of one that will last into early next year, probably most likely as well. And so just kind of a devastating injury. You feel bad for a player like Malik Nabers. He's obviously explosive when he plays.
Sure.
Great player. And yeah, outside of that, that was a pretty devastating injury.
Fairly early in the game too. I mean, they still came. They were able. They controlled that entire game against the Chargers. And we'll talk more about the Chargers charging a little bit. There was news late last night during Sunday Night Football, and hopefully this actually matters or doesn't. Meaning you're not watching the halftime show if you're stressing out about the Chiefs if they actually get back to the Super Bowl again. Bad Bunny, what do you guys make of this? Bad Bunny is the Super Bowl halftime performer in Santa Clara, coming up later on in February.
Honestly,
where are we at on Bad Bunny performing at the Super Bowl?
This goes back to what Drew had said maybe a couple of weeks ago. No one is too big for the Super Bowl. Bad Bunny has the most streamed album in music history. He has one of the most downloaded albums. I think it's the second most downloaded album in music history. He is an insanely popular artist worldwide. So even if you are like, wait, I don't listen to a lot of Bad Bunny, he's one of the five probably most popular artists on the planet. So I'm not surprised that he's the person doing the Super Bowl halftime show. This tracks, I guess. I didn't go dive into the depths to see if people hated this. Do people hate this? Or do people like this?
There's
a lot of mixed reviews about it, actually.
Okay. I think there's some people that have been complaining for a while. Some people have wanted a country artist, and so they've been saying that for years. They haven't got their country artist.
It's not as universally appealing.
It's a worldwide audience. I think there's some of that. There's other components to it, I think, that have irritated some people as well. It's fun. Like, the halftime show, I think, in general, gets way overblown to begin with. Like, it's fun. If your team's in the Super Bowl, I don't care about the halftime show. To me, you're stressing out about your team, or you're mad that your team's getting their ass kicked in the Super Bowl in the first half
last year.
So to me, the halftime show matters more if your team's not in it, when you're like casually watching the game. Otherwise, to me, I speak out of my personal opinion, I'm way more stressed watching the game if my team's in it, so I don't care about the halftime show.
Sure, but that's been a recent phenomenon. You did used to care about the halftime show. Yeah. And I think most casual viewers of the Super Bowl.
I think he'll probably crush it because they're going to spend months and months. The production value is going to be insane, I'm sure, and I'm sure it'll be great.
Somebody says that they don't know who he is. Yes, you do. Yes,
you know what? Actually,
you've seen him in commercials. You have seen him before.
He was the caddy in the most recent Happy Gilmore movie. He's everywhere.
Yeah, him and Kelsey were both acting together.
If from the 816, if you're a wrestling fan, there was a massive. It got a bunch of appeal because if you watched, he had a massive WrestleMania intro in Puerto Rico.
You've definitely seen him before.
Might not recognize the artist or the songs, but you definitely recognize the person.
We had Isaiah Pacheco on the show during training camp, and we asked him about going to a Bad Bunny concert.
Yes, it was a beautiful experience with the fam down there. And also, we got invited to attend the Bad Bunny concert from Bad Bunny and his team. And so it was a great experience. And not only that, we did the jersey swap in his locker room before his big game day. So that was right there for him squeezing me in there and getting a little session in. It was phenomenal.
Some people think that it's the NFL being kind of like with the international stuff, with the international games. They're more fixated on the global audience, somebody argues.
Oh, I definitely think that that's at play. They're not wrong there. If your argument is the NFL cares more about the global audience than the United States audience right now, I don't even actually think that's a well-kept secret. They already have you.
Yeah.
Football is the number one sport in this country by a mile. It's not even close. They've already won you over. They're not trying to win the United States audience of NFL football. They got you. So yeah, they are more focused on the international audience, and Bad Bunny fits that mold, I guess, if it will. Yeah, and most Super Bowl halftime shows are pretty good. It's very rare that I'm like, that completely stunk. So like, most Super Bowl halftime shows are pretty good, and he puts on a pretty good, like, it's a big production, his shows. So I would assume that this one would also be a pretty big production, that's all. Someone says, thoughts on no English. I don't care.
I have seen a lot of that. They've had Latin.
I think that's part of the deal as well.
That is why there's some people upset, because they're like, they're not going to understand what he's saying during the whole
halftime show. People who don't listen to his music aren't,
And so I actually understand that. Now, I would say they've had Latin artists perform at halftime before. Not entirely. Like Shakira and J-Lo.
Yeah.
Now, they also sing some songs, like, or J-Lo sings songs, obviously, in English as
and
well.
And also, like, the song that you just played, like the sample, it's a vibe, you know, it's a vibe. Like, it's something you can get up to, and it doesn't matter the words.
Are you listening to that when you're jogging
in your
tank top?
I've never listened to Bad Bunny before, but I know that he's big time, so I don't listen to Bad Bunny when I go on a run.
I've tried to get into it because I know how popular an artist he is. It hasn't hit with me yet. Yeah. Like, personally.
I know it's that not he's really good at what he does, and you respect that, but he's just not for me.
For the same as a lot of other artists I've tried to get into, and you're like, eh. I mean, I like, sometimes you get the, like, it hits for you and sometimes it doesn't, but I also think it'll be good. And like, I literally, everybody in the text line, it's a mixed bag.
Yeah,
never heard of the guy.
You're never going to make everybody happy. They could have picked, you know, Adele, and people have been mad and said it would be boring. They could have picked the most popular country
someone
artist right now.
Metallica. And someone, like, I will say, I don't want anything pre-1995. I'm good.
Yeah, I just think there's no way when you make these announcements that you're not going to tick some people off. That's just the reality of choosing a halftime show. By the way, Monday's football coverage is presented by Busey Bank, where they're focused on your success. At Busey Bank, they've been building business and growing wealth since 1868. Learn more at buseybank.com. Up next, let's talk about this defense, which proved to us once again what they are. That's coming up on...
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Cody Ingle.
Quick snap by Jackson. Stays up in the pocket. Now he's going to scramble. Flag on the play. Ball comes out. He's hit from behind. Jackson's hit from behind. And the Chiefs say they've got the football. Kansas City's got that football.
Offense number 77.
Drew Tranquil with the fumble recovery. That's a steal. That's a stop. That's a stop. That's a steal. And the Chiefs up 20-7 have the ball again in Raven territory.
Mitch Holthus on the call yesterday right here on your home for the Chiefs. 96-5, the Fan. Drew Tranquil, one of the many of the key defensive playmakers yesterday. Of course, Leo Chanel, who we're going to hear from in a second, had an unbelievable interception off of Lamar Jackson. It was one of the more impressive ones you'll see, especially from a linebacker in coverage like Leo was. I want to get to him in just a second. But this defense as a whole, there's no doubt post-Chargers game, they've been one of the better defensive units in football. I'm not saying they're the best defense in football, but to me, there should not be a question that under Steve Spagnuolo and with this group that, let's remember, still has some young pieces in the secondary that I think has already shown some signs of improvement, to say the least, they're going to be one of the better defensive units yet again. I know we were all worried, and I was, after week one, like, oh my goodness, this unit, is this going to be able to come around quick enough to help this team win football games? And all they've done has been one of the biggest strengths of this football team since the Chargers game. And some of the numbers behind are kind of crazy. You know, we mentioned they got to start forcing turnovers and all that. Well, that's exactly what they have done
been
the
last
able
two games.
To do the last couple of games. They've been forcing turnovers. Obviously, they held the Ravens to 20 points, knocked Lamar Jackson out of the game. He looked so uncomfortable when he was out there, to say the least. We all know what he did the week before to Russell Wilson. Say what you will about his performance. Jalen Hurts was held to 100 yards. This defense, I'm not really worried about the defense. I'm not saying they're going to be a top three defensive unit in the league. But Steve Spagnuolo continues to be the best in-game adjustment coach in the NFL, period, on the defensive side of the ball. First drive of the game when it's scripted, Baltimore carved right through him easily. You're like, oh, boy.
And he's like, okay.
How many times have we had that conversation, though, since we've been doing the show about Spagnuolo? And, hey, they'll get you in the first half or for the first quarter of the first drive. In this case, it was one drive. But in-game adjustments, he's the best at it. He really is, and this defense is a massive, massive strength for this football team, and it's why they're going to be still one of the better teams, I think, when the dust settles and this offense really gets going consistently for people obviously wanting to see more. I get it. But the defense, I don't need to see more from the defense. I would like to see more pressure from the front four. But in terms of do I buy into them being one of the best units in football? Yeah, I think they are going to be a top 10 defense fairly easily again when the season ends.
If they had a slightly better pass rush, I'd be ready to tell you that this is the best defense in the NFL. Not one of the, not like without qualification, the best. Baltimore was coming into that game scoring 37 points a game. And held them to 20. And one of those was a garbage time Justice Hill run when the game was completely out of hand and it didn't matter. And it's not like they've been taking on a bunch of weak offenses outside of that. You might have been bored with the Eagles. They have the 7th best offense in the NFL right now. A team did not run all over them. They will face Detroit and Buffalo, the number 1 and 2 ranked offenses in the NFL right now, coming up pretty soon. And the Chargers in the games that they're scoring, if you forgot the Chiefs game, they'd be a top 10 offense in the NFL. They are one of the top 5 defenses in the NFL, and largely based, it seems, on scheme and secondary, which is an interesting way to build a defense, admittedly, as a top 5 defense.
That's
typically
facts.
People, yes, but typically they build it on the defensive line, and I would say that's not this team's strength. They play great defensive back defense. They, like Trent McDuffie, Jalen Watson, the corners, they blitzed Nick Bolton 10 times in that game, according to Next Gen Stats. He created 5 pressures. He was free. Rusher, half of the time he was going after the quarterback. So scheme and secondary seems to be the entire basis of a top 5 defense, but it's working.
Yeah,
and there's no reason to think it'll change.
Over the last 8 quarters or so, 4 takeaways, 5 sacks, only given up, I think if you include the Justice Hill one, I think 3 touchdowns or something like that over the last 8 quarters, 4 touchdowns over the last 8 quarters, something like that. So yeah, they've got something figured out. I think it was Sam McDowell who was in the locker room and he was in the corner. He was talking to Nick Bolton. And then I saw the story out this morning, clearly what he was asking Nick Bolton about as well. What was impressed about Spags is they ran a certain scheme in one point of the game that they had not run ever under Spags, I think it is. As
he said, Chiefs. 7 years is what it
is. Yeah, essentially it's happened one other time. That's the kind of stuff that makes him so good. If you're the Ravens, you had no reason to believe that was coming. Yeah. You don't think they don't run that. They don't do that. You don't have to worry about that. And yet he goes in his back pocket and pulls that out, and it ends up being a massive play for Kansas City. That's the genius that is Steve Spagnuolo. And I think you got some guys in the secondary building some confidence. Jalen Watson, to me, should be getting a little more attention as well, how well he has played. We know what Trent McDuffie is going to be. He's a stud. But Jalen Watson's been awesome. When he's healthy, he's a pretty damn good player.
And they made some changes, which I think we'll talk about later in the week. Like, Gelati played as much as Charles Minnehue, and Dan has been hurt. Like, it's not even like they've been at full capacity. They signed Christian Fulton with the hope that was going to strengthen their defensive backfield. Instead, they got Roland Wallace out breaking up picks and doing stuff. I mean, they're getting contributions from everyone. Look, I'll be honest. I think they've got a lot of talent on defense. Spags is why I think. If you made me switch defensive coordinators right now, I don't think they're a top 5 defense.
No, that's what I'm saying. This is a Steve Spagnuolo conversation. Yeah.
Like, it's not to say that they deserve no credit or have zero ability. That is not the argument I'm making. But the reason why they're elite is because what they're able to do defensively. Another player that we could talk about more in depth individually, Leo Chanel, is developing into a Swiss Army knife. Yeah. He's doing pass rush snaps from the edge. He's out here in coverage making picks. Like, I mean, I get it. We knew he was a good athlete, Gold, probably when he climbed up that double-decker bus in the Super Bowl parade with ease.
Yeah.
But like, he is kind of like a do-everything guy right now. But it feels like they got a lot of do-everything guys on the defense. They're just they
athletes.
Move.
Yeah, I mean, like, got, you know, plain and simple athletes and athleticism off the charts. You mentioned the parade thing. Remember when they drafted him? I'll give Bing credit for this. As much as we give him a hard time about the Josh Simmons stuff, he was right on Chanel. When they drafted him, he had mentioned quite a bit about the athleticism scores and just how this guy is going to be a freak and be able to play in all these different spots. And we're starting to see it more and more. Last year, it started with the block punt or the block kick, yep, or whatever. And you're like, wow, here's the athleticism on display. And now you're seeing him delve into multiple roles. I think you're right on not only as a pass rusher as well, but that interception, I mean, that's elite stuff as a linebacker.
One-handed
to be in,
back in coverage.
Here's what Chanel said in the locker room on that pick.
I was just doing the best to key his eyes. You know, I honestly kind of struggled with that, you know, in the past in college and stuff. And I was kind of always a run-stopping linebacker. So, you know, over the years and especially this year, just trying to like work my eyes in coverage, you know, learning from these guys that are a little better than me in coverage. So it's definitely been a blessing.
Just flat out has improved in that particular area. And that if the one complaint has been about the linebacking unit has been, hey, you know, there's some guys that get exposed in coverage. Yeah. And now if Leo is able to, because by the way, if you're Lamar Jackson, you're not expecting that, that kind of play. Like you're thinking, oh, we got a great mismatch here. We got a linebacker on our guy. And Leo made him pay. I mean, it looked like Leo was the wide receiver on that route. I mean, he ran the route as well. That's what was so impressive about it. Not just the fact that it was a one-handed INT, but if you're Lamar, you'll take that matchup and that shot every single time.
Every time.
It was just a great defensive play. And it helps when things maybe are clicking and you're also playing with a little bit of a lead. This was also what Leo had to say.
I mean, it's definitely you know, motivating and energizing when everything's clicking, you know, offense, first teams, defense, you know, all those. And like guys running off the field, yelling, like, you know, every single, like all three phases just yelling and get each other going. It's like nobody's like dead. Like everybody's like just energized. So, you know, it definitely does feel good, especially at home.
I was feeling to get out there and play with a big lead. Had a lot of close games, but now this one kind of got away from them and you guys were able to coast in.
You know, it feels good, but at the same time, like, we just treat it like, hey, reminding each other 0-0, you know, just do our jobs. You know, that's how you get yourself in trouble, is, you know, feeling too good about yourself. So I think a lot of our guys took a great approach at, you know, just doing their job and executing, and a lot of us guys take pride in it. You know, we want to, you know, finish out the game strong, not just win.
I think one thing that stands out about like what he was doing and what they were doing on defense is, I don't know if it's just, I used to think it was because Patrick Mahomes was so great and they just felt like they couldn't stick with it. But, like, Mahomes has been not regular Mahomes for some time, right? So you don't feel this or shouldn't have felt this instant pressure or constant pressure to be the way. They are better at convincing teams to try to be something they're not in the middle of game than anyone else. Once again, we're coming into a Monday where how many times did they give it to Derrick Henry? Like 9-8 times?
Yeah, they had like 46 yards rushing or 50 yards rushing.
Justice Hill was once on the field on 3rd and 1. They could. How did you convince them based on lineup in the game that Justice Hill should be on 3rd and 1 against what was going into the game the worst defense in base defense in the NFL, as in like against the run? So like they were supposed to be bad in those situations, and they just convinced these teams, I think, through looks and confusion, and they get in their own head, and then they decide to do something different, because the Ravens have now entered a game against the Chiefs in which they have gotten out of what makes them a good offensive football team. Every time they face him, I don't know if Harbaugh's in his own head. I don't know if Lamar checks out, but like they just don't have any answer for what the Chiefs do defensively.
Bigger picture for Baltimore. Let's talk about them and then we'll get right back into the running game. Also, Breshard Smith got more snaps. I know we were all excited to see that. And you saw, you know, some more of what he can bring to the table. We'll discuss the offense again here at 11 o'clock and welcome your guys' interaction as well on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. By the way, I've seen a few texts just to address it again. We are aware that there's issues with the Odyssey app. It's a company-wide national issue. They're working on it, so hopefully the app works. Remember, you can watch the show, though, on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, X, wherever. And, of course, you can listen on the radio on 96.5 FM.
So if you can't get it over on the app, come join us on YouTube. Yeah. Like and subscribe. It's at the top of your feed.
But bigger picture with the Ravens. I mean, Lamar, we're going to find out about the hamstring fully today. Maybe it turns out to be way more serious. I hope it's not for their sake and for his sake. But Lamar Jackson, you know, a couple things with his performance. One, I think he was extremely flustered throughout that game. That's a credit to the defense. But also going back to the week before where he was sacked 7 times. This is an ongoing issue for Baltimore. Yep. Now. You're talking about the rate at which he's getting sacked. A lot of that's the offensive line, but a lot of that is he seems just not very comfortable back there. Now you're telling me he's going to maybe be dealing with a hamstring injury. bigger picture for Baltimore, I mean, they're 1-3. We all know that. You got the Steelers atop the division. Cincinnati plays tonight. They got a backup quarterback, but they play the Broncos tonight. Cleveland's Cleveland, right? So it's a right now a Steelers division looks pretty good for them. Their path at this point in time, Baltimore is not getting any reinforcements. Nope. That's why I think if you're a Baltimore fan, you listen to Harbaugh talking after the game, it seems like they recognize they're very concerned about where they're at. That was before Lamar. We'll find out. Hopefully it's not serious, as I said. The hamstring strain, he looked like someone's just frustrated and kind of threw in the towel a little bit late in that game.
It certainly looked like, and there was like 4 minutes to go in the third quarter. That's what's crazy. Like, your team just blew a game in week one. It's not like there's not enough time for you to score. You're the high-flying Ravens offense. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt that maybe it's a serious injury enough that was going to keep him out of the game and that he'll have a difficult time practicing this week. So I'll wait on the, although it did admittedly on the broadcast, look like a guy who just quit on the game. It did. Whether that was what really happened or not, that we can all agree that that's definitively what it looked like. The problem I had in this game is, for as much as we talk about the Burrow, Allen, Jackson, all this stuff outside of Mahomes, I am officially no longer thinking it's a matter of if for Lamar Jackson, which I did think for the other quarterbacks for a long time. This looks like a quarterback who's never going to win the big game. Every time he goes against Kansas City, he looks like the quarterback who's never going to win the big game. Every time he goes against the Bills, he looks like the quarterback who's never going to win the big game. And I don't know. It's now such a long history of it. It's becoming very difficult to ignore because he plays MVP. He's got two MVPs. Looks like he should have won a third last year. He looks like the kind of player who can light it up against everybody until the lights are bright. Both teams are 1-2 and you're desperate and things have to happen. And then Mahomes pours it on you. And by the end of the game, you're not on the sideline. You're not even in the game by the time it finishes.
So I don't know if I'm with you on the, hey, it's just never going to happen for Lamar. What I will say, though, it's a reminder that windows typically don't stay open as long as they have right now for the Chiefs. And, you know, obviously the Bills window is still open and all that. The question, I think, more is bigger picture with Baltimore, with Harbaugh and that roster and everything, is the years left for Lamar to get it done. How many of them are left? The Chiefs have obviously already accomplished 3 rings and the yep. window is still open and who knows how many years they have left, but it's a wider margin in a larger window than any of these other teams. Buffalo's, I still think, is pretty open, but at some point in time, theirs will narrow. Baltimore, out of the grouping of teams between Baltimore, Buffalo, and Kansas City, their window is the shortest. And it's yeah. looking like it might, you know, I think if we would ask before the season, you would have said their window's at least open for another 3 years based on the roster, based on the quarterback. Is there a chance that it's a little bit close to closing? I want to be careful not to slam the door shut because I still think if Lamar's not out for an extended period of time, to me, there will be still some games that they remember. They've lost, you know, they've lost to Buffalo. They've lost to Kansas City and Detroit. So it's not like they've lost, you know.
No, those are 3 of the better teams in the NFL.
So I don't think we should write off the Ravens yet in terms of making the playoffs and things like that. But I hear what you're saying. They look like a team, though, that the window organizationally might be closing in on them
a little
bit.
It's more bigger picture than even just this year. Because in truth, the Ravens they're a Super Bowl or bust team. So, like, your record currently doesn't matter. You go to the Super Bowl and you win it, or this season is a waste. They're 1 of 5 or 6 teams, I would say, that is held to that standard going into the year and will be held to that standard throughout the year. So their season's not lost based on that. Versus, like, the teams that are like, we're just trying to, like, find our balance and be a competitive team for a couple years, the way we talked about the Royals or whatever. It's not like that. For them, it was just win the Super Bowl or nothing. And look, after all this, I'm pretty convinced the Steelers are going to win the division. Which is...
They still don't look that impressive, but they're winning
games.
No, not
at all.
But they're winning games. I mean, they play Justin Fields and Carson Wentz so far this year.
Yeah, yeah. Look, they're not beating anybody of importance. And it might end up being 10-7 that wins that division. That's why the Ravens are still decidedly not out of it there. It just looks like a team that even if they made it... Let's say they won their division. They rattled off some wins. I'd have no confidence that if they had to go against the Bills or the Chiefs in the playoffs that they're ever winning that game. Lamar has shrunk specifically against those two opponents. Not against everybody. He dominates most of the league most of the time. But against those two opponents, he does not show up. I do not.
Yeah, but against Buffalo, I mean, in fairness, against Buffalo and Lions.
It was his defense that.
Well, it was his defense and Derrick Henry fumbling the football. Lamar Jackson, actually, with the exception of this game we just saw, this is why I'm impressed by the Chiefs' defense. With the exception of this game, Lamar's played great all year. He really has.
9 touchdowns, 0 picks going into the game.
So people can bring up the injuries on the Ravens' defensive side. Offensively, this defense for the Chiefs, that was so impressive because Lamar has actually looked great with the exception of yesterday.
And if we go back to last year, they lost that playoff game because Mark Andrews couldn't catch a football.
Absolutely.
Otherwise they beat the Bills in Buffalo. So I think the narrative changes completely if some of those things happen.
But unfortunately, it's like he could have changed the narrative in 10 other games, Drew.
I'm not saying you're wrong, but
he could have changed the narrative in a dozen other times that he was facing.
And I'm not saying that his window, I don't agree with you guys, but I think there's things that are out of Lamar Jackson's hands that, similar to how things were out of Joe Burrow's hands last year, he did everything and they still lost games. It feels that way for this Baltimore Ravens team. And also, when Lamar Jackson said Mahomes is his kryptonite, you introduce that every single time they play the Chiefs, Lamar Jackson will have that feeling in his head because he already vocalized it to you publicly. The fact that he said it publicly means that every single time he hears Patrick Mahomes' name, probably, he knows, oh, it's the Chiefs, he probably thinks back to that same thing where he's already lost half the battle, because I think he legitimately thinks that he just isn't able to beat him for whatever reason. And I do think
he called him his kryptonite years ago.
I think
it's held up.
That gets introduced every single time they play again, because as soon as you say that publicly, I feel like that doesn't go away.
It goes back to, you're right. I mean, this goes back a couple of years. It happened in the playoffs a few years ago going into the game. Like, in anytime people will ask you across the country, if Cody's doing a radio interview or me or wherever, we're on these different shows, we have people on our show, and it's like, they're like, hey, who do you fear? It's not Baltimore because of what we just said about the head-to-head stuff. You know, Josh Allen obviously has a different conversation. He, of course, we all know, hasn't beat Mahomes in the playoffs, and that'll continue to be a storyline until it ever happens. And at some point, I don't think Josh Allen's going to go 0-12 in the playoffs against Patrick Mahomes, okay? Like, at some point, he probably will win one of those. But the fact is, Lamar Jackson and the Ravens as a team, I think, actually, it's way more concerning for them in the window closing than it is just Lamar Jackson. I actually think Lamar's been fine. But that was discouraging if I was a Ravens fan to also just see, though. It looked like he just said, all right, we're not winning today. I'm a little banged up. I'm out.
Yeah.
And I'm checking out.
That's what it looked like.
And I'm checking out, and I'm not trying to get back in this game.
Did you guys stay up for the end of the Sunday Night Football game?
I did.
Little
ridiculous.
40 tie, Scoragami.
Yeah, man. Look.
I saw you ask, like, do they need to fix it? Fix it? Those two teams did that to themselves.
Oh, the tie?
Packers were moving glacially. They could have sped things up to try to get in the damn end zone. They didn't look like they had a care in the world. They're going for a Sunday stroll. They look content to tie.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to change. Like, ties are lame, no doubt. But, like, still, that game was so weird. 40-40, it is a tie.
Great game last night. I the Cowboys, frankly, most people, including myself, thought they were going to get their ass kicked. And they didn't. And they were until the blocked extra point changed the entire game. It's crazy how something like that.
13-0,
blocked extra point
and then
changed the entire game. Dak Prescott was awesome last night.
He was flat
out awesome last night. Of course, George Pickens was great. They did that without CeeDee Lamb. It was really impressive. Yeah, what I was saying about the end of the game. So two things I would adjust. Like, I think if they already adjusted the rule, which they did this year, to match the postseason, but they didn't totally do that. Two things either need to happen, unless you're just fine with ties, and that's fine, is instead of 10 minutes, it should be 15. But even if you're like, no, they don't need another five. They had plenty of time in the four quarters before. Okay, I'll hear that, and I kind of agree. How come it's not the same as postseason all the way around? Remember in the Super Bowl 2 years ago, the Chiefs got the second possession, as we all know, against the 49ers, and everybody was freaking out because they read the
postseason
but they were reading, the clock was going to run out. Everybody was panicking before they threw a touchdown to Mecole Hardman to walk off to win with, 15 seconds or 12 seconds. Last night, the Packers were way too casual, I agree, but it was up against the clock late, and that's why that third down was bizarre, and they should have spiked the ball. Jordan Love's very fortunate there was 1 second on the clock.
Yeah.
But that would be my only adjustment. Maybe you don't make it 15-minute overtime, Cody. And this happens like twice a year. So in general, it's a conversation. It doesn't matter that much.
I gotta change the whole rule because of one game
a
year.
But I do think if both teams now on the new rule are allowed one possession, which they are, then that second possession, the clock should be allowed to run. Like, if you still are possessing the football.
You're saying the way it would have been in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's all. That'd be my only adjustment.
Look,
but
I mean,
Jordan Love, I don't know. Dude, I'm shocked the Cowboys clock operator did not just let that clock sit another second. Like, I don't know how there was
integrity,
still 1 second
man.
On the clock. And
that's what
Jordan
it is.
Love, he was about to run out of time. He did basically run out of time there. I don't know why he wouldn't spike the ball on the third down.
That man has integrity. That's why,
They got very fortunate. And my money line bet on the Packers was very fortunate just to be a void.
Yeah, that is a flat void.
It was part of a parlay because they were significant favorites.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah.
I get, if you wanted to make an argument that it should be a 15-minute quarter instead, I'd probably hear that out probably before. Let's just let people, because
I just don't like ties. Like, you play 40-40, you play that long, a freaking tie. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I don't like ties either. But, I mean, we don't need to go adjusting it just because there was none in 24, none in 23. There were a couple in 22, one in 21, one in 20.
They already adjusted the rule, though, this offseason.
One in 18.
They do adjust it, though. They switched it to the postseason rules without the clock issue.
I think they need to not worry about a clock at all. You put the ball on the 50-yard line, each team gets a possession, and then you see how it goes. And if you go to a second one, as opposed to college, I think you should at least be able to get a first down to get yourself in field goal range.
I don't think, like, this race against the clock should be something that you should care about. Like, I like look, you could say this because this is a truly American sports thing. We're up against the clock in American sports. Worldwide, they don't do it that way.
I mean, not in college football.
But in U.S., their overtime rule, no. But at any other point, it's a race against the clock.
Yeah.
Clock takes it the same room like the Elam ending in basketball. Yeah. It's a race against the clock. It just is. I don't think that there's, the NFL didn't do anything wrong. The Packers could have just hurried. They could have, operated with some pace. They could have pretended like the clock mattered, and they didn't.
Yeah, I would just go full go with what they do in the Super Bowl. And I understand the Super Bowl can't end in a tie, but if I am each team now is allowed one possession of the football, even if the first team scores a touchdown. In this case, it was a field goal, but still, if the Cowboys would have scored a touchdown, the Packers still would have got the ball. The Packers, they should have the length of that second possession to finish out the clock. That's all I'm saying.
I don't think you need a clock. I think it's more fun if you just let the clock shouldn't matter. If it's 4th and 10 and you got to go for it to get into field goal range, you got to go for it. I think managing the clock is just what. I don't think it's needed because college football overtimes are great, and I think it gets each team a possession, and it's a shorter field. I think you don't worry
it's
about
great
punting.
Lots of people hate college overtime is great for the first two. The third one becomes a 2-point shootout. That's the dumbest thing ever.
You're right about that. The whole 2-point thing is ridiculous.
Because why, Drew? Why do they switch it to that? Because they're trying to speed this up. It can't take 5 hours. That's why don't want a non-running clock. At some point, sports have to end.
I know, but
I don't want them to go.
We'll pick this conversation.
Though, I think it's more fun to watch.
We're late. We'll pick this back up, I promise, but we're way late for a break. Well, let's talk about Breshard Smith on the other side a little bit of this rushing attack. Plus here from Isaiah Pacheco. It is a victory Monday on Cody Ingold.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.